Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with T. Frank Carr. T. Frank, we've now had a little while since the blue-white game, a chance to digest things. How are we feeling, my friend, post-spring practice?
I mean, I don't think anyone watched the blue-white game as much as I did, other than maybe the coaching staff and the players. Legitimately, I watched it through every day last week, just because every time you watch a football game, if you're looking for something different, you know, and this is just my process where, like, I'm trying to produce content out there. I'm not just trying to learn and then move on. Like, I'm trying to find out an interesting nugget here or there, a wrinkle here or there, and then write about it. So I watched the blue-white game every day last week, which I think people who watched it, like fans that watched it once and went, meh, and then moved on. So, you know, way too much time. But I think we learned some interesting things, despite the fact that I've been told all week that you can learn nothing from the blue-white game. So I don't know what I've been doing, but here we are talking about it.
Well, you're giving us content, T. Frank. You see things when you watch it. You watch it differently than the layperson, I will put it. But I've talked about this before. Over time, in dealing with someone like yourself, I've learned how to watch a game differently. Not quite at your level, but I do watch different things. And actually, I'd like to take this opportunity to allow myself to ask you my questions that I have coming out of the blue-white game. Could we kind of go through the different position groups? And there were things that earned if I think I learned was accurate or not. Let's start with the quarterback position. It's pretty obvious what we have, the pecking order. It's Drew Aller, then it's Bo Prabula. The interesting thing in this game was Jackson Smolak, the presumed number three guy, was out hurt with a significant injury.
Yeah.
What I liked about – there's nothing I like about a guy being injured. Okay, let me put it that way. But it gave us a pretty good opportunity to see Ethan Grunkmeyer, who will be a true freshman. Now, I have no expectation of him playing a significant down come fall. So this was the opportunity to see him. I thought he looked pretty good out there, T. Frank. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, so I'd say the smallest sample size of the three, so there's very little to kind of pick through from a he didn't pee down his leg and drop the football and then run off the field, you know? So he's a football player that played football, so that looked good. I'd say the one pass, we talked about this pass last week, with the one pass that I thought showed some really good awareness on his part of, like, not just point and shoot, which some young quarterbacks are like, here's my first read, and then if it's not there, what do I do? And Ethan, I think in high school, showed a great command of his offense and a good processing power and second level understanding of football. And there was a play where the first side was covered, so he got to the backside and very quickly worked through his progressions and threw the ball to an open receiver in the correct zone. But the way the wind was that day, when you're trying to loft a ball and place it into a spot rather than put it on a line and throw it to somebody, it wasn't happening. And then he threw another deep ball into double coverage. That one, I didn't, you know, not every play got the same level of detail, but it, you know, that looked like I need to throw the ball now from what I remember. And just kind of like that was I don't know, as much of a decision as it was a predetermined throw. So limited information, but I thought he looked fine in the game.
All right, let's move on to, I think, more interesting position battles, and that's at running back. We know Nick Singleton, we know Catron Allen, they're 1 and 1A. We got a nice sampling of what comes next. The battle was being described as the battle for the number three running back position for this coming season. I personally also looked at it as kind of a preview for what we're going to see come 2025.
Yeah.
I thought all three running backs, Cam Wallace, Quentin Martin, and London Montgomery, each had their moments. Maybe London Montgomery, it was just that one run where he just a dynamite move that he made. And I'm a fan, so I overreact to it and say he looked pretty good there.
Yeah.
What did you see among the three running backs? And could do you have a takeaway to say, you know what, I think this guy is going to be the number three?
So I would say that it's funny that you mentioned the thing from London, and that is what you remember from the game, and I don't want to take it. This is always the problem. There's no reason to bring it up, but there's also the run where he was running up the middle and got totally whacked by Tony Rojas for a no-yard gain. Like,
yes.
It's not just that his momentum stopped. It was that he fell backwards, and that's kind of the thing with London is he – like, even watching him in practice, he is so fluid. He makes great plays, but he's not big enough or strong enough yet to be a legitimate factor. And really, I thought he was the last guy of the group of running backs, and I thought David Kensey actually got more literal run than he did in the game, which is kind of indicative of where he is on the depth chart or where he is in the pecking order. So you go up to that battle for the running back three position, and I think that both guys made a legitimate case. Cam Wallace did more hard running between the tackles. So Quentin Martin, whether it was advantageous or his own skill, he got into the open a lot. And, you know, I think it's partly skill, partly the ability to find those holes and those gaps and those seams, but also not running into some of those looks that Cam Wallace had to. So I think both showed strengths. Both of them showed good to very good. You know, Quentin Martin, I think his vision, his ability to follow his blocks was really mature. You know, this is a guy who is not a polished running back or really a polished football player overall, who I thought showed some really good instincts and some ability to have a maturity about his game. And then Cam Wallace, I thought overall, you know, you have the drop pass. A dropped pass when he caught another one that was like at his ankles on the move. I thought those were kind of a net neutral. You want him to catch 100% of the passes, but that was a good performance by both guys. And I think they'll be able to, whoever is the guy is going to be better for this competition.
And I'm again to 25. I look at it as this could be another Nick Singleton, Catron Allen, where the two running backs could complement each other. Is it also potential to have, you know, a 3A and 3B, depending on the situation, where both those guys, Cam Wallace and Quentin Martin, get run at the QB, or I'm sorry, the running back three position?
Sure. I mean, situationally, if you need a guy that has different skills, yeah, absolutely. I think that Andy Kotelnicki is pretty adamant about that. And so I don't think there's anything set in stone on this particular depth chart. I'll also say that, you know, they're bringing in three running backs next year. So it obviously people will have an advantage by institutional knowledge, but it'll be an open competition in 2025. I don't want to lock anything in particular, even though Quentin is obviously a very talented football player, that Tyke Hayes is a great running back, you know, from a talent perspective, and he's big enough. So we'll see. You know, that's so far away that I think I want to leave it open that even some of those freshmen can contribute next year, given that they seem to be pretty good at recruiting running backs.
And just the last thought there, going back to London Montgomery, perhaps at some point we'll believe James Franklin when he tells us things like he told us in a press conference. London Montgomery hasn't changed his body at all. He's not big enough yet. And you gave the play where it was pretty obvious that he didn't have the strength of a Cam Wallace, and we saw how he did on he ran hard. All right. Let's go to the big one. And we have a few minutes left in quarter one. I'm not sure this is long enough to talk about wide receiver. We have Lambert Smith leaving the program through the portal along with Malik Mega. We had who I presume as a starter and Julian Fleming playing with the blue team. Make heads or tails out of this for me, T. Frank, at wide receiver.
Yeah. So again, when you're taking something from the blue-white game, it's a snapshot of where the team is right now at the end of spring practice, which is informative because we don't know during spring practice where things stand. I do think you can get a sense of where things stand based on the blue-white game. They are practicing. They're not going to just waste a practice for performative, like for theater. You know, there are things that matter, and there are. I think, again, you look at the way the teams were split up, you can see roughly what the depth chart looks like, and then you go by how many reps these guys got. This is all to say, I went through the receiver position, and it is fluid. So this is general how this works. Trey Wallace and Julian Fleming were playing the same position on opposite teams. So I don't know that Julian Fleming right now is a starter. He is... And this is kind of the conversation around position and the importance of a spot on a play in the offense versus your three best receivers on the field. So there's general buckets of receivers, and these don't mean anything, and they do mean something. Like there's the X position, there's the Z position, and then there's the slot position. So I generally categorized it as Trey Wallace and Julian Fleming are the Z. What I've seen over time from Penn State in general is that your Z receiver is your number one receiver, who's your best overall player, your best route runner, understands the offense, and will get a volume of targets. So if you're saying you want that position to be future-proof, that you've got two guys that can play, so if something happens or somebody needs a blow, you don't lose production at that receiver spot. That being said, Trey Wallace played the X before. So you can have these guys in the starting lineup. If they decide they want to have those guys in the starting lineup in the future, they can do that. And Drew Aller talked about this, of having the offense be plug and play where guys can play any position. I would stretch it theoretically even to, you can have guys lined up at the Y, which is the tight end position, or you can have a Y lined up at the Z or whatever. So you have this flexibility in the offense theoretically. So a lot of this conversation is academic, but it also is informative of the idea they have now, the plan they worked on this spring, and where players stand within that. So I think that explains to me that particular dynamic in the game.
And it's fascinating, and I want to pursue it a little bit, this idea of being positionless at wide receiver and being able to move guys to the different spots. That was brought up by several players also. T. Frank, we will pick that up when we come back right after this.
This is Landon Tangwall. We've teamed up with F45 Training and State College and their team of certified coaches to bring you an exciting opportunity. Starting Monday, April 15th, and running all the way through April 30th, Keystone Sports Network listeners are able to try out F45 Training in State College for 2 weeks for free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in group class environments. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress with their in-body scanning, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before the end of the month to take advantage of this limited offer. Go sign up now.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is T. Frank Carr. This is quarter number two. We are looking at Penn State football. T. Frank, we were kind of going around the offense, going to the different position groups. I'm giving you the things that were kind of my takeaways from the blue-white game, then wanting to get your take on it. And we were talking about the wide receivers, and it was fascinating. You talked about Trey Wallace and Julian Fleming playing the same position on the different teams, the white team, the blue team, when I think a lot of people assume, hey, they will be two of the potentially three starting wide receivers. But the other interesting thing was, you brought it up, and Drew Aller mentioned it, and I think some of the receivers, that receiver, we often talk about X and Z and Y and the different positioning, But they talk about having the wide receivers, all of them capable of playing any of the positions.
Yeah.
How complicated is that? And what advantage does that create for the offense?
So it's not, let's start with the advantage. You get keys and you get tells from the offense based on alignment and personnel in those alignments. So this team really likes this play out of this formation from this part of the field. So if you can make your receivers interchangeable, you give less tells. It's kind of like the offensive run game. If you can run from offensive odd alignments, say you're running a zone from the front side, then that is a tell that you're a tendency that you're breaking so the defense doesn't anticipate what's coming. So that is the advantage, is you can mask these things, and also you can put your best players in the best places to succeed more times than not. You can call more plays for a certain player. So let's say Trey Wallace is the number one receiver in the offense. They want to get him a high volume of targets. Well, you don't want to run the same five plays. So what if you can bounce in between positions and different plays have different number one receivers in the progression? So we're going to look from here to here or here to here, you know, left to right, right to left, wherever the progression goes based on the pre-snap read, all those things that go into the quarterback. And you can see where this is now getting complex, where the quarterback has to know all of the reads. He has to know what the offensive line is doing, what the protection is, what the adjustments are. He has to know what the routes are and what their adjustments are in those situations. So you don't know if you're getting man or zone. And a lot of plays have option routes where if you get zone, run this route. If you get man, run this route. And they're similar, but that's where you see, like in the blue-white game, Drew Aller throws to the back shoulder of Andrew Rapelier, and it looks like Drew Aller's off target. Well, Andrew Rapelier didn't make a good pre-snap read of what the defense was doing. He ran a man route, and it was a zone, so Aller threw to the zone spot to the zone route, and Rapelier wasn't there. So those are the complexities. The receivers have to know all those routes, all those adjustments, all those minor details. Is it inside leverage? Is it outside leverage? Am I having to run it a certain way at a certain depth? But the way that Andy Kolnicki has talked about this offense is that it's simplistic at its core, and the complexity comes from the different augmentations of, we're going to line up so that it looks like our number one receiver is the X on this play, and suddenly he's the Z, or whatever you would do based on formation alignment. So those are the different nuances of having the receivers know all those positions and then know all of those different functions within each route and each position, where if you want to play fast and aggressive and you want to have, you would have these guys have defined positions and they just have to know their part of the play, and that gets more guys up to speed more quickly.
All right, let's quickly look at tight end. We know Tyler Warren's going to be the guy. He didn't play. That gave us more of a D. Andrew Rapelier, Khalil Dinkins. Khalil Dinkins, by virtue of seniority, is next in line. But is that necessarily the case, or is Andrew Rapelier challenging him for number two?
This is where we don't have enough information, because they only played with one tight end, which we talked about last week. And it is significant for a number of reasons. Let's talk about the receivers. If you're going to play 12 personnel, who are those two receivers in that package? Is it Fleming and Trey Wallace? And does Trey or Julian move in a 12 personnel set? We saw that from Penn State last year, where it's not necessarily your two outside receivers that stayed on the field, because you had Keandre Lambert-Smith stayed on the field, even though he was the slot. So there's a lot of versatility within the receiver room within these formations, which is another sub conversation of what we don't know about the blue-white game, and where we have to take what we've learned in context as a snapshot we were presented. So in this particular situation, what I learned about this particular offense was that Andrew Rapelier and his physical abilities, he seems to be in the lead for the competition for the backup Y tight end. So Tyler Warren is the pure tight end. And then in offenses, you've got the H-back, or the fullback that plays quasi tight end, is a way to kind of describe that. Your number two tight end is also kind of a fullback. So Dinkins could be his spot right now, but he didn't play it. So what we saw is Andrew Rapelier started the game for the white team. He got more reps in the game than Dinkins. Now, you could say, we already know what we have from Dinkins. He doesn't need to play a lot. That's fair. You could read it that way. Or you could see Andrew Rapelier, they wanted to get him a lot of work there because they think he can be the primary backup to that position so that Dinkins can focus on the H-back position, which is more his skill set, where he can move, he can run routes in the slot, he can come from the backfield. The blocking is different. He doesn't always have to be blocking a defensive end. He can be blocking linebackers and on the move, and he can be inserting into the offensive line, so he's blocking body types that are more his size. So that's the open question to me, is what's going on at H-back, because we were intentionally not given that conversation. So there is a certain percentage of Rapelier could be the backup at both positions. He's got that position flexibility, and that's how he fits into the offense, which means we would see much less of him if Tyler Warren is getting those eight targets and he's not getting those at that position we saw during the blue-white game. So that is, I think, how I read what was going on last Saturday.
Okay, let's take a quick look at the offensive line, which it's tough to come to final conclusions. Yeah. You're missing Drew Shelton, you're missing J.B. Nelson, you're missing Anthony Donka. I think my takeaway from it, T. Frank, was where they had Cooper Cousins. They had him with the quasi-starting group with the white team at right guard, and then pretty quickly, it seemed they also got him reps at center. I thought that was my takeaway from the.
Yeah, this is where you've got to kind of be careful because. So I did a depth chart, which if you want to go check it out, bluewhiteillustrated.com. And I put an asterisk next to players that didn't play in the blue white game for whatever reason, whether they were injured or they were held out because they're veterans. So three of the five players we have identified as left tackles didn't play in the game. You have Sal Wormley, who I just realized also needs to have an asterisk because he didn't play in the game.
Oh, that's true.
And Anthony Donko. So you've got one, two, three starters that didn't play. And then J.B. Nelson, who you can make an argument is or isn't the starting guard. So Cooper was playing right guard out of necessity. Like, he was the last available body they felt comfortable putting out there. But I do think it's indicative of how he could be potentially used this year, because I don't know that he's going to be the starting center. And this is exactly why. Because if it's even close, you can still play him at center. You can he can get a series or two at center. And you can keep Nick Dawkins as your starter. And then you can play Cooper at two positions. So you can play him. Basically, you've got two longtime veteran football players in age, Sal Wormley, Nick Dawkins, who are older in the program, and you want to keep them fresh. Well, Cooper Cousins can go in there and play either of these positions. So I look at him now as a flexible interior player, more so than he's in a hard competition for that starting center. This is kind of the conversation we were having before the blue-white game and before the spring game of, like, how is he going to fit in here? We had the conversation, what's the best-case scenario for Penn State? And I think this flexibility, because you saw J.B. Nelson wasn't available, and you're starting to steal depth from the interior because those tackle positions, I think we saw pretty clearly Javen needs some more time. Donko wasn't available. I think Nolan Rucci's a good football player, but there were some things I saw that I thought were concerning. So now you're down to, okay, we have an idea of these guys definitely need to work out a tackle, meaning Drew Shelton and Anthony Donko. So JB's got to be available if anything happens to those guys. So now you need to make those decisions on the interior about how you're going to prepare your offensive line for the full season. And I think that's what Cooper is doing. And I don't think it was something he was doing all spring. I think it was something that happened towards the end, because we didn't see him at all with the guards until the final week. So this is something that was both out of necessity and, I think, a long-term progression plan for Cooper on the interior.
Putting the positive spin on this with several guys out, you know, having guys nicked up on the offensive line is not unusual, okay?
Yeah.
To be down two or three offensive linemen is not a crazy thing. And to have the depth to be able to do this. So if you have a Cooper Cousins coming in as a true freshman and you feel at all saying, okay, I'm all right plugging him in at guard, I'm okay plugging him in at center, that's a pretty good end result.
Yeah, and it's something that James Franklin talked about. You saw probably if you're a diehard Penn State fan, if you watch this show, you probably watch James Franklin's conversation with Christian Hackenberg. And he mentioned how this year they decided that they were going to go hard in spring and they were going to push through some of the bumps and bruises. You could see they came in without Garrett Sexton and Drew Shelton at tackle. And then they lost some guys during the spring. So they just decided that we want to build toughness and physicality and strength and understand how to thud and really work through contact. So you lost some guys on the interior. And as you said, younger guys got more experience. They got more training than they might have because guys were out. Now, those guys still need to, like, I don't think we've seen anything proven from JB Nelson that he is a high-end starter in the Big Ten. So he also needs those reps. But, you know, like you said, you're building depth and you're making, you're hopefully in the long term, their plan is to make their offensive line more bulletproof because of it.
Very good, T. Frank. That is it for quarter number two. When we come back in quarter three, we're going to have your questions for T. Frank. And don't worry, quarter four, we'll talk defense.
This is Landon Tangwall. We've teamed up with F45 Training and State College and their team of certified coaches to bring you an exciting opportunity. Starting Monday, April 15th and running all the way through April 30th, Keystone Sports Network listeners are able to try out F45 Training in State College for 2 weeks for free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in group class environments. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress with their in-body scanning, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before the end of the month to take advantage of this limited offer. Go sign up now.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's T. Frank. I'm Jim. This is where we take your questions for T. Frank. If you want to send a question in for T. Frank, just download our app, Keystone Sports. You'll see the Ask T. Frank button and away you go. If you do that, you'll be like Gary from Hanover. He says, T. Frank, how much access get very so how much info can you get from practice versus say the blue white game?
So I think I heard your question there. How much practice versus the blue white game? It's infinitely more in the blue white game. We get 10 minutes roughly of positional work, a little bit of skeleton offense, working through some pass routes and concepts during the season. We get to see a little bit more because they have less time. So they can't, sometimes they got to work on stuff when we're there. And those are the things that we don't, you know, it's in poor taste to share. So, you know, that's the trust level of what we try to give you a hint of, you know, at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com on the message board is some of those things that I notice. But the blue white game, they're playing football plays live in front of us. So it is the biggest window any of us get into Penn State football during spring football. And I think that's why it is, you know, you can't dismiss it. They only get so many scrimmages where they go and do what they did in the blue-white game. And if nobody's there, are they going to work on things that are like the full-blown offense? Absolutely, yes. But they're also working on core concepts that are going to be in the playbook. They're just not showing you the full play. They're showing you parts of it. And even during the blue-white game, they're running 3-by-1 sets. They're running offensive oddities that are very basic, but things that are stressing the defense for moving the tight end from one side of the field to the other. And Drew Aller talked about that during the season or during the spring season, where he was talking about, we move the tight end, it changes things for the defense. It changes coverages, responsibilities. And we saw a mild version of that in the game. That's the point of this offense, that the number was about 5% of what we saw of the offense. And I think that might be generous. Defensively, I mean, I put this out on social media this weekend. Tom Allen is not a person who I think can hold back. And Penn State is not ultra vanilla in their blue-white game. They were running a field blitz from the slot safety lion position with a coverage rotation that isn't basic and vanilla. So a basic vanilla coverage is two safeties are deep. You've got two corners. If we're doing cover two, playing in the flat, most teams don't even blitz during their spring games. And I'm not trying to make a mountain out of a molehill. But you did see a lot of corner blitzes. You saw a lot of, maybe not a lot of, but we saw more defensive line movement than I was expecting. So, you know, you learn a little bit about what they're trying to do and some of the things that they're working on specifically that they want to get better at. I know watching Tom Allen's defense that those things are absolutely in the playbook. I know the other things they didn't do based on his time in Indiana, and there's a lot more. So you're learning kind of the core concepts they're working on versus the look they're getting and how those players perform within those specific plays that are definitely part of the playbook. So how are they learning and retaining the information? How are those guys, how are linebackers filling gaps? How are guys timing blitzes? How are guys, all those things. So you can learn all of those things as long as you're mature enough to understand the context of what you're seeing. Then I think you can learn stuff from the blue-white game.
Also, I think it's worth noting, T. Frank, I believe it was North Carolina that I read. Their spring game was scheduled to be on the ACC network, but they canceled the television coverage because they didn't want other teams to see it. So, for what that's worth. All right, let's go to Jack in Canada. He says, hey, T. Frank, you on occasion will reference conversations you have with members of the coaching staff. What coaches impress you? Who is fun to talk to? And these can be either past or present members of the coaching staff.
I'm a big fan of talking to Jay Wonsider. I just think, you know, you understand having a conversation with him, why so many running backs like playing for him. He's an engaging person. He is charismatic. He holds a conversation well. All the things that make a person just intangibly magnetic. Like, I there's a reason he has never been an offensive coordinator and people see him as a head coaching candidate. I know this is unpopular, but I like talking to James Franklin. I think he will give, you ask good questions, he'll give you a good answer. And he tries to give you at least something for your question if you're asking something respectably, you know, and I always try to, here's the other thing. And I think people know this, and this is just where I'm a little bit different, is like, I'm not writing to get a quote for an article. Most of my questions are genuinely to learn something and to learn his thought on some aspect of football. And he's, at least with me, been very forthcoming. So, you know, I think all of those things, I enjoy that interaction more than fans want to, you know, they want their pound of flesh. They want the bloodletting after a loss. Like, you know, that's never going to be something you're going to get from me specifically. Other guys that I like talking to, Anthony Poindexter's fun. I like watching him coach as much as I like talking to him. I think he's another really engaging personality. Still getting to know Andy Kotelnicki, but I've enjoyed my interactions with him so far. And anyone that's willing to talk football with me, really, if you're willing to share what you know and you're willing to share your insights on any positional conversation, I'm always happy to learn and to listen to those people. And Ty Howell's great. There are very few guys that are hard to interact with, I think.
A couple quick points on that, T. Frank. I think the fact that you're looking to talk football versus getting a quote, the way you put it, makes you a little different than some of the other members of the media. And I think the coaching staff will respect that. And the other thing was the reference to James Franklin, always made he can be. He tells you stuff. He does give you information that you don't otherwise have. If the questions are the right questions, we talked about London Montgomery. He was very candid about that. And yes, yeah, maybe he's trying to send a message to a player also when he makes those comments. But yeah, I thought he was being very candid and honest. All right, let's go to...
Can I just say one last thing on that? And I want to, because I have a specific position, luckily, because of the people I work with. I don't have to get news necessarily. I don't have to be the person asking those questions. I'm afforded that opportunity. So I don't want to make it sound like I'm better than anybody. I just have a particular lane that I stay in. And that's really, I think, my point is that other people have to do those things. They have to ask those questions. They have to get those answers. I benefit from that. But I also hope that people benefit from the questions I ask, that we all learn a little more about football and Penn State's thoughts on football in that. I always want to make sure I'm respecting the people who do have to ask those questions, because I don't have to. And I'm grateful for that.
Well, I'll say it, T. Frank, you are better at it. I love your questions. It's when I read a transcript of those press conferences, I'm reading a transcript, okay? I can see a question. I go, I'll bet you that's T. Frank. I could tell when it's your question.
Yeah.
And I typically like those questions, so I'll say it for you. All right, let's go to Jason in Tunkhannock, who says, I think that player development is very underrated compared to star ratings of recruits. I was wondering what position you think is most dependent on coaching and development. I think quarterback is the easy answer, but I'm going to go with offensive line. What do you think, T. Frank?
Well, you answered your own question, and you're right. It's offensive line. It's the most demanding position, I think, technically, because it is the least natural. So you've got to do things that are in reverse of the defensive lineman coming at you. You have to understand their technicalities, their moves. You have to be strong. You have to be quick-minded. And so you have to have all of those techniques. Your technique can't be something you're thinking about. It has to be something that is intrinsic to you. And so getting those shortcuts and understanding how to use your hands, marry those with your feet, have your base, have your posture, all those things are incredibly important. Where a guy like Chop Robinson works really hard on his athleticism, but not everyone can bend like him. And so that is, and he said, that's very natural for me. So that's something he was partially born with, and it made better throughout his life. Where an offensive lineman, nobody's made to be an offensive lineman. I think the other position is receiver, where there's a lot of different ways to play receiver. And if you're good at one thing, you can get on the football field. But to be great at receiver, you have to have a lot of diverse skill sets. The difference is with the offensive line, you can't be deficient anywhere and be a great offensive lineman. Whereas a receiver, if you're super fast and you can jump high and you got good ball skills, that's fine. You might not be a good route runner, but you can do that one thing and be on the field and be a major contributor. So receiver, I think, to be complete, is probably up there on the positions I think that are hardest position to me to play, though, is linebacker, because the way modern football is, you just can't be right. And so you've got to be, I don't even know like how you play that position and be elite anymore, you know, to the level that I think fans kind of expect from what it used to be. And you have to be hyper athletic. Like, that's just kind of a physical demanding position, and also one, you know, we're instinct of what am I seeing and am I right about those things? So football's hard, I think, is what I'm saying.
Well, I just like to add to this whole concept with offensive linemen. I think more so than other positions, and maybe this isn't so much coaching as strength and conditioning, those bigger guys have more need for physical development. 150-pound tackle who has to build his body up to 300 pounds, or there are 320 pounds who has to lose the weight, get down to 300, and then rebuild back up to 320. I think that happens more often, T. Frank, at offensive line than other positions.
Yeah, for sure. And because there's the idea that, excuse me, sorry, I timed that poorly. you have to be big, and so you put on the wrong weight, and that, so, yeah. Big athletes are hard to find. So bottom line, if you as an offensive lineman, you need to be able to run comparatively like everybody else on the field, but also be the biggest person on the field.
Very good, T. Frank. That's it for Ask T. Frank. Stick around. We're going to look at the defense when we come back.
This is Landon Tangwall. We've teamed up with F45 Training and State College and their team of certified coaches to bring you an exciting opportunity. Starting Monday, April 15th and running all the way through April 30th, Keystone Sports Network listeners are able to try out F45 Training and State College for 2 weeks for free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in group class environments. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress with their in-body scanning, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before the end of the month to take advantage of this limited offer. Go sign up now.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's T. Frank. I'm Jim. T. Frank, good show so far. We were talking about things that we learned from the blue-white game. Mm-hmm. What it told us about as far as depth chart, where some of the guys stand, what we learned. We also had a very good Ask T. Frank segment. We went over the offense in quarter number one and two. Let's get to the defense. And T. Frank, I think it's a little bit different on defense because I'm almost of the feeling that there's not that same kind of pecking order because so many players get rotated in and out that it's not as much because you have the rotations, but that doesn't mean we didn't learn anything. Let's make the questions a little bit more general, starting with the defensive line and some of the things that stood out. For example, I thought Jamil Lyons stood out among the on defense. We had heard his name mentioned quite a bit, but we actually got a chance to see it. What are the things that stood out to you among the defensive linemen?
Yeah, if we're talking about performance level stuff, Jamil Lyons was the best player on the defensive line, I think. And that's not controversial, and that's not really that insightful because he was on one. But I think it speaks to the level of depth they have at defensive end, where Zariah Fisher didn't play from what I saw. And I didn't write it down, track every snap, but I watched every snap, looked at the rotations, looked at where guys were lining up. He was not there, where you would expect him to be based on where everybody else was. So you have the conversation of Abdul Carter's moving to a room where they already had three defensive ends that were going to be very productive, dangerous players. Zariah Fisher is a good football player. So you've got a stacked position you added more to. I'm always more interested in those little nuggets we can pick up. So how are they playing their defensive tackles from a scheme perspective? And again, this is an area where it's hard to learn, but we can see what they're doing. So there's some, you know, kind of, again, it's a snapshot of where they are right now. So they played by positional type, but without a true three tech, one tech. So guys that played in a series played kind of big and little. So Zane Durant, Devon Ellis played together. Hakeem Beamon didn't play, but you saw a lot of Devon Townley and Keziah Izzard. Caleb Artis and Devon Townley together. Keziah Izzard was with, I think, Ty Blanding. So you had pairings based on what you would consider by body type. So we do know a little bit more about how they're planning to play these guys. Without all 22 footage, you can't really be totally sure. Like, okay, who lined up as a one tech? What did they do post snap? Where was their gap assignment based on their movement? So there's a lot of stuff that, you know, I wasn't going to go in and try and guess without some of that information. But this is kind of how we can generally see how they split up the defensive line. And then for the most part, they had the starters with the white team and they had the second string and the freshmen with the blue team. So we got to kind of see how that secondary offensive line was playing. And I think the other guy that played very well in his situation was Ty Blanding. Ty Blanding was on the white team. And he was, I think he looked really good. I think he beat up on some of those younger offensive linemen and got consistent pressure and was disruptive. So, you know, he's a guy that we talked about last year. James Franklin mentioned we need to talk more about this guy. And I don't know that he's going to play, you know, because you've got a really stacked room in front of him. But, you know, could he leapfrog Devon Townley, who is transitioning from defensive end? He might get some snaps this year, but that's obviously a whole summer and training camp away from that conversation having any sort of resolution.
Well, I think that creates the general takeaway that there's depth on this defensive line, a lot of depth.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yep.
You know, moving Abdul Carter to defensive end just adds to it, enhances it. But again, I don't feel like it's, this player gets beaten out, he's now second team, because they play so many guys, they rotate so many people, yeah. And there's obviously advantages to that. It keeps everybody fresh. Maybe more interesting, T. Frank, is the linebacker position. There's things that I think I know, but then there's things I'm not so sure of. I think Kobe King and Tony Rojas are the two sure things.
Yeah.
But what else is there that we can get from that linebacker group?
This is where it gets tough because your linebacker room was split a little more evenly, I'd say, based on what we have been talking about this spring between the blue and the white team. So let's give an example. Dom DeLuca, you would say, is their base Sam linebacker, not their Lion. They never played that position. They only played three linebackers on the white team when they wanted to give guys a blow. So you don't really have an idea of the depth chart here or the pecking order, especially at that Will linebacker, which I think is, to me, the most interesting. So Dom DeLuca played as the number two Will linebacker. Is that how it is, or is it Kavion Keys? And we've talked all spring about creating depth at that linebacker position. Well, one way to create depth is to eliminate the Sam entirely and play entirely as a Lion package. Or a nickel, you know, whatever you want to call it. So what's the plan there? We don't know based on the blue-white game because they only played against 11 personnel with three receivers. So they didn't get into any third down sub packages. They didn't get into any of those things that would change the snaps for the defensive line too. Like, how do the defensive ends work there? How do all those goal line situations? They only played these particular things, which, you know, is intentionally putting a keyhole that we have to look through into the defense. But I do think, based on James Franklin's comments and based on the way they played, that the backups to those starters are not set in stone, nor are they something you should feel super confident about. I do think the one area is Tamia Robinson looked better. So that Mike linebacker position, now you have a third guy. You have a guy who's, I think fans are very excited about. I don't know that he was great, but I do think he showed an awareness and an athleticism that you were hoping for. You know, he was able to cover Andrew Rapelier down the seam a couple of times and look good doing it. You know, he's a big dude. I would be concerned at times about him changing directions and running. And he wasn't necessarily playing press man coverage, but he was able to drop to a spot and intercept and track him down the field. That looked good, you know, kind of getting into the, getting into his run fits and all those things. It's really hard to make a strong determination just on the broadcast, but he didn't look out of place and he made some good plays. So that particular position, I think there's still a lot up in the air, but you're right. Tony Rojas, Kobe King, you can lock that in. And then everything else I think is on the table, including maybe even Tamir playing Will. If that is something in the long term, they don't feel good about what's going on there. You know, you still got Tyler Elsden making some depth out of that, I think, is also something you could do.
Okay, you mentioned the Lion position, which it looks like it's that safety playing what you've often talked about as that 11th player.
Yeah.
Did they give us, I think we saw that. How much did you learn from that? As you said, it looked like it was a base package. Tell us what we could take away from that with the having a safety play as that line position.
I think Jalen Reed played one or three and a half plays. Like, he was barely out there. So, and he got a sack on one of them. So, there's some incomplete information because we heard a lot about AJ Harris, right? So AJ Harris, we heard, could play all five positions in the secondary. He only played boundary corner or outside corner, excuse me, because of the depth chart split. So that means we got to see so much of Colin Dinkins on the blue team because you wanted to get an extended look at AJ Harris at a primary corner position. So he's on the depth chart at Lion in theory, but I didn't put him on, you know, where I didn't add him into that given we didn't see him play the position. But I think the main thing that I came away with is Jalen Reed and whoever is a safety in any given year under Tom Allen is going to be the Lion, you know, but then it's just a nickel corner. So Cam Miller, Zion Tracy, AJ Harris, these are names that are going to be involved there. But also, and interestingly, Tyrese Mills for the white team, kind of once the backups came in late in the game. At first, I thought he was just a Sam linebacker, but then he started rotating into deep coverage and playing all over the field. So his position is once again a big enigma. I don't know that it matters necessarily. I don't think he's going to be a part of the plans this fall in a meaningful way. Because you got so many other names, but really to me, this whole spring I've tracked one safety and then a bunch of corners at that position, and going back and looking at what they did at Indiana, kind of the same thing. So that's kind of how I view the position now. And I seriously don't know what the plan is with linebackers at that position. You know, that's open without any other information about heavy packages. I think anything there is on the table because we just don't know.
Going to the defensive backs, the cornerbacks specifically, we all liked AJ Harris and what we saw from him. Mm-hmm. Was that an overreaction on my part and the other fans?
No, I think it was pretty good. I mean, he went up against Julian Fleming. No, I'm sorry. He went up against the starters. Yeah, he went up against Trey Wallace and Amari Evans and most of the first team white receivers. And so it looked, you know, that was a real test, unlike Cooper Cousins, who's going up against fellow freshmen. And we know he's passed that test already. So looking at some of those situations of player on player, you know, I think we learned a lot more about AJ Harris, given that most of the freshmen transfers and other players were on the blue team. So Cam Miller looked good. AJ Harris looked good. Audavian Collins was the starter. So I think that might be the biggest surprise and upset of spring practices. He put himself in position, and whether or not that's because they had a decision that all transfers are going to be on the blue team other than Nolan Rucci, because we desperately need him. We ran out of tackles. And we need to get a realistic look about the offense. Or if Audavian Collins truly was a guy who worked to that number one corner position opposite of Cam Miller. Again, blue-white game, some of those decisions are hard to know. But again, based on generally where they played, and cornerback is very fluid, the primary backup here is going to play both positions, but like in a general left-right who played on the same side on opposite teams, this is a very deep position. They're young, they're going to make some mistakes, they're going to get beat, but I think there's a lot of talent here.
Very good, T. Frank. That's going to have to be it. But just a quick side note, you mentioned Audavian Collins. We've been hearing positive things from him. James Franklin, I think, has mentioned his name multiple times. We need to pay attention when James Franklin tells us stuff. All right, that is it for the show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
This is Landon Tangwall. We've teamed up with F45 Training and State College and their team of certified coaches to bring you an exciting opportunity. Starting Monday, April 15th, and running all the way through April 30th, Keystone Sports Network listeners are able to try out F45 Training and State College for 2 weeks for free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in group class environments. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress with their in-body scanning, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before the end of the month to take advantage of this limited offer. Go sign up now.